So I'm here with Devin Cook. This is so cool to have you on. You know, it's crazy, like, how, like, you meet other comics. Like, I saw you at Caitlin's mic.
Yeah, Madison.
And that was wild. It was, like, you were so good. I don't know if you remember the joke. We talked about it. It was something, like, space-related.
Like something. Is it about the moon?
Yeah, the moon.
Yeah, I just got into this, internal riff in my head of, like, what is the dumbest opinion that I can think of?
Right.
Like, it's so funny to me when people hold these, like, they hold fast to these stupid, useless opinions. And I was like, you know what? Fuck the moon. The moon's stupid, right? No one likes that thing.
I was just like, I like this person immediately. And it's just funny. I like, my sense of humor just goes that way. Because I'm always so weird. Like, I envy that you kind of know the, like, pattern right away. When I was starting out, because I did improv for, like, 8 years before, and I always wanted to do stand-up. But, like, when you're 16, you can't stay up. So it's, like, you know, it's, like, crazy. So, like, I just had these premises for a long time. It was, like, there wasn't really, I didn't know how to do, like, punchlines until, like, a year. And I was, like, okay, now I understand the formula. Right. But it seems like you have gotten it really quick. And I like the, like, inventive stuff. I always like inventive stuff. And the other thing I was just curious about is, I don't know if this is just me, like, do you feel like, just based off your look and your stuff, like, that people kind of make assumptions about you that might not be true, or about your comedy, or about your personality, or...
I mean, maybe. I am such a raging narcissist that I don't care
right.
if people are making assumptions right. about me. Like, no one's ever approached me and been like, I bet you do a lot of period comedy.
Right.
And
I was just curious, like, if you get comparisons to, like, Tig Notaro and stuff like that.
I mean, people say Ellen a lot.
Ellen a lot? Just like, yeah, that's just the hair thing. Yeah. No, I was just curious.
God, I would love it if someone compared me to Tig Notaro. That'd be incredible.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
She's great.
Yeah. What are some of the comedians that, like, influenced you to start doing stand-up?
God, I've been such a comedy nerd for so long.
Yeah.
If you'll look over at that shadow box on the side table, that's just full of comedian signatures that I've you know, gotten to be a fan of theirs.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Who have you met?
I've met Paula Poundstone.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cameron Esposito was the first one I did this with, and I, at the time, I didn't have anything for her to sign, so I just pulled out a random business card from my wallet, and it was my gynecologist business card. And she wrote on it, "Yup, I'm your gyno."
That's funny.
And, like, some, you know, some smaller, or, like, mid-tier, I guess, LA comedians that I became a fan of through their podcasts and stuff. So, like, Dave Ross and Kyle Ayers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who Dave Ross is.
Yeah, they're super great. I fucking love
that. He did a podcast with one of my favorite comedians, who's probably, like, my favorite comedian that I always name, but no one really knows who he is Hampton Yount.
I love Hampton.
I love Hampton.
Wait, are you a Suicide Buddies fan?
Yes.
Yes, buddies! Oh, my God.
I was so mad when he stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And he's another person of just, like, really inventive stuff.
He's in his bit about when he realized he had a drinking problem.
Yeah.
And, like, he'd wake up and his apartment is trashed, and he's like, what is there, ghost rats in here?
Right.
He stops, he's like, there's not enough love. That's my favorite joke.
He talks
because
about,
what unfinished business does a rat have?
He's like, I saw a rat, and I found it was a rat, because I thought it was a cat. I was like, oh, come here. And it's like, oh, that's a rat. And then it goes into the wall. It's only rats and ghosts are able to do.
Only rats and ghosts are able to do.
Yeah.
I love him.
He is so great. He has this great, on his, because he has three of his albums on Spotify. And last year he put his first one out that came out in, like, 2008. And it was like, I don't even think he was headlining yet. And it was just, like, funny because he has this one bit that's so great, is about, you know what? Fuck it, I'll play it, because it's so great.
Hell yeah.
But,
shout out to Hampton Yount.
Hampton Yount,
father
yeah.
Father of one.
Yeah. It's so crazy that he has, like, a kid now. And I love that his hair is, like, gray now.
Just, like, slate gray.
Like,
out of nowhere, too, I feel like.
It's like Steve Martin, mm-hmm. almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, this, this bit is, let me see. So he has three albums. This one from 2008 is called Unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
And then his 2016 one is called Bearable.
Right.
And then his, like, recent one from 2019 is called Able. Able,
yeah.
So, it's really great. But, Marijuana Ads, it's, let me see if this will play. Yeah.
Grape crunching sounds.
No, it's okay. That's fine. Oh, I don't think the Wi-Fi is working.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I could get you on it if you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I don't want to put too many dead air, so...
Wait, I don't iPhone. Oh, God.
Shuts the door, screen goes dark. Then cutting through the darkness, you hear, no.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit.
He's just so...
He's so great. Good.
And I love the first joke because, like, it's so hard, especially on your first album, to think, I'm going to do a rape joke.
Yeah. Like... yeah, it's a tricky thing to do. And he does it really well. And it's not... And that's the thing. Like, you have to pivot it. Then Bill Burr does this really well, too. Where, like, you start with, like, a tricky premise where people could be like, ooh.
Right.
But then you shift the focus. You shift the subject matter to either, in Hampton's case, hey, what if the messaging was different?
Right.
Or in Bill Burr's case, it's me. I'm the idiot.
I'm the idiot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always... You know, I think with comedy, the toughest thing is realizing the power that you can have.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the scariest things about it to me, is when I used to, you know, get heckled early on, you know, it's very funny. I would go to New York, I would do these Springer shows, and, like, it was awesome because I knew they were, like, scams. I knew they were terrible, but, like, the reason why I did them was... my family could come and see me. And also, like, I've been doing comedy, like, a year and 6 months, like, 2 years, basically, almost. And I was cool. It was cool because I could, like, practice material and then do it, like, in front of people.
Yeah.
And it was always so funny, like, the people that would get mad at me, it was always, like, elderly women and, like, elderly people because I did a lot of, like, atheist jokes.
Okay.
And I was like... I was like, oh, shit, I didn't mean to make her grandmother upset. All these 20 and 30-year-olds are loving this, you know, material that I'm doing. And I'm like, oh, this isn't getting on. It's like, I don't want to make your grandmother upset.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the thing about comedy. And, like, not in, like, an edgy, I've got to challenge people.
I think that kind of gets, I don't mean to, there, you can finish your thought. I was about to finish. And I was like. That's the one other thing with interviewing. It's like, gotta get better at that.
Oh, true. Yeah. I know. I understand. I think it's best when it's irreverent.
Right.
I think, and not in like, again, like not in an edgy, you know, I should be able to say whatever I want
right.
type of thing. But like, what are we doing if we're not challenging things?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think the really cool thing about stand-up is just finding the cool ways to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the whole point, is, like, I remember hearing recently Anthony Jeselnik saying this, and then, like, Christopher Titus saying it. It's, like, all the comedians, like, they got away with it. You know, it's, like, they did it correctly where everyone laughed. And to me, like, that's the biggest thing. Like, I've been, you know, not to talk about myself too much, but for the past three, almost 4 years, I've been writing this, my first hour. Like,
right, yeah.
And it's really interesting because... I don't want to be, like, one-man show-ish at all. I want to just be straight stand-up. But there has to be a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's called What the Dweck is Wrong with Me. And
that's awesome.
A lot of it is just, like, I talk about, you know... It's a lot of jokes that I've accumulated over, you know, 8 years. But also the main crux of it is me talking about, like, my autism.
Yeah.
And it's, like, that's a hard thing to talk about because it's literally a spectrum thing. So, like... There's a lot of, like, moving pieces to it where I have to make sure that everything sounds, like, okay.
Sure.
And that I don't, like, you know, it's kind of, I have, like, a tongue-in-cheek joke of, like, you know, as a straight white male, of course I'm going to gatekeep something.
Right.
And
yeah,
this
yeah.
is something that I gatekeep.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in your blood.
Yeah. It's like, I got to talk about it. So it's... But that's a cool thing to, like, go around. And then to look at it from, like, the landscape of all the different jokes that I do is, like, it kind of puts it to... Because the thing that kind of is so interesting is it's all about relating to people. And I think comedians are the least relatable bunch of people.
Because yeah, we're all sycophants.
And also, it's, like, what is the one thing that... everyone hates, like, that everyone, you're told that is everyone's, like, biggest fear is public speaking.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, we just do that.
Yeah.
And the way that I sort of explain it now is the cool thing with comedy that's kind of, like, crazy about it is it takes very little to realize how much better you are than people or, like, not, like, in a negative way or that people aren't as scary as...
Oh, yeah.
They are. you go to an open mic, and even if you don't perform, like, the first time that you go, you'll go, oh, I saw three people who were terrible. This isn't scary at all.
Right, and then the crowd, like, especially in a room full of comics, the crowd tends to be very kind about it.
Right.
Because we've all been there.
We've all been there, and people want it to work. You know, that's the one thing that's easier, is when people want to work. Of course, there's always mics and stuff where, like, the audience, like, doesn't want to be there or doesn't know. And, you know, it's kind of funny when I was... when COVID was happening, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of comedians that were coming in and doing stand-up, like, when there was no one, it was just comics.
Yeah.
I was like, I know this sucks to perform in front of other comics, but just realized, like, we used to have to come in and there'd be a family, like, eating with, like, their five-year-old kids, and, like, five comics are talking about their dick in each set. Yeah, <right. laughs> It's like,
God, what a escape for that poor family.
Yeah, it's like the owners tell them, okay, there's an open mic here, but it's like, where are they? So they gonna sit?
Yeah,
and they're like, I'm working on my art. It's like, what are they talking about? And yeah, I wanted to ask. I don't know if this is rude to say, you're like 32, right?
Yeah,
I'm 28. When you started, did you feel like you started at the right age that you wanted to?
I think about that a lot, and I wish that I was further in than I am, because mm-hmm. it's almost been a year.
Right.
It'll be a year in, like, next week or something. Mm-hmm. But when I get into that mode of, like, oh, I started too late or whatever, I have to remind myself I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready.
Right.
Before I started, and it was my friend Julie. Did you meet Julie?
I think
Price?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Julie who got me out to my first mic, and it was just like the perfect, just the perfect happenstance where she showed up at a music open mic that I was at, because I do music as well. And she was like, "Oh, well, I go to this comedy mic once a month," and I was like, "I've been thinking about. I had already, you know, a whole list of jokes that are garbage, and you know, had been like I said, a comedy nerd for years and years."
Right.
And just really loved it and wanted to see what it was like, and it turns out that I'm an addict.
I mean,
do it all the time.
Hearing just, like, the people that you like, the one thing that's interesting to me is when I started, like, when stand-up was on TV, like, mm-hmm. at first, on Comedy Central, it was in a really, like, weird period before I became a fan of it, where, like, it was just not a great lineup of people that they played all the time.
Yeah.
Like, they played Gabriel Iglesias, who was, you know, great. And then it was Dane Cook and Jeff Dunham for the two others. Yeah. So it was those three. Mm-hmm. And then, like, a year later, like, 2008-ish, I started watching, like, Showtime stuff in HBO. And that was where I found out, like, Bo Burr and Louis. And just, like, you know, it's such a sad thing with Louis C.K. because he was, like, one of my, like, influences. Mm-hmm. As, like, yeah. I was like, oh... because he looked so different from, like, the stereotypical, like, comic to me.
Sure, yeah.
I was like, oh, he's not, like, a guy in a suit. He's this fat guy in a t-shirt. I'm a chubby, you know, guy. I'm like, this is relatable for me to do. And then it just became, like, a super fan. And the cool thing with, like, starting to listen to podcasts, it was, like, 2011 was, like, the boom.
Yeah.
It was, like, Mark Maron's podcast, Pete Holmes, and, like, all these, just, like, finding all these people. Finding this whole roster of comedians that I loved, and then the, like, the just impetus to be on stage, mm-hmm. and you're just like, okay, I gotta get there somehow.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just getting there, and it's so weird that I did improv for so long, because it was just, like, I didn't really watch, like, improv stuff, but it was just, like, Whose Line Is Anyway style stuff, and
sure.
it was good for me to learn how to fail on stage.
Yeah.
Because that was a major thing that was good. And it made me, like, quick on my feet. But the one thing that happened was when I switched to stand-up, I was like, oh, this is all on me now.
Yeah, right?
If something goes wrong, it goes wrong just on me. And that's the one thing that, like, I'm very, you haven't taken any classes or anything mm-hmm. for stand-up,
no.
right?
No.
I get a lot of flack for this. I kind of have a mean opinion on it that you don't need to do those.
Yeah.
Because
but you just gotta throw yourself into the fire.
The funding, and also I like being self-taught.
Yeah.
I like that last year I taught myself how to do, like, callbacks and stuff like that.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it's like, you can only get there to know it yourself.
Yeah.
And your comedy is, like, the thing that's crazy about comedy is it's both universal and personal.
Mm-hmm.
So your sense of humor is incredibly personal to you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you laugh at something that people think is, you know, not funny, or not even, like, you know, people are surprising, always surprised at, like, the stuff that I laugh at. You know Ricky Ramsey? He's like...
Yes.
Yeah, he's like... He's always surprised at, like, the dark stuff that I like.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's the humor that I like. Yeah.
I mean, I'm the kind of guy who laughs at a funeral.
Right. So. Yeah. It's like, whatever you get. So, the other question I had is, you mentioned, you know, doing music. Was that, what did you do, music-wise?
I sing. I don't play any instruments.
Oh.
But my dad is a folk musician.
Oh, sweet.
So, I grew up with music just everywhere in my life. And my partner plays a bunch of instruments, so we'll go to music open mics, usually on Sundays. And then I'll hit up Silverstream afterwards. Go to Silverstream.
Oh, yeah. Silverstream, I've been a couple times. That's an... You know, it's so weird being in different, like, mics.
Yeah.
To me, the thing that's always... Like, especially those guys, I get along with them pretty well. They're just not the people that... Like, I'm closest with.
Sure.
So, it's kind of hard. Because you're like... The thing... You'll probably relate to this. This is a comparison I make a lot. When you start doing stand-up, it doesn't matter who starts doing stand-up. You always feel like you came into the... You always feel like a TV character that came in at, like, the third season of the show.
Yeah, totally.
You're just like, all these characters are established.
Yeah.
Everyone knows each other.
Yeah, like group chats and all this community. Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I gotta establish myself. And that's a real, like, I had the opposite from a lot of people. Like, that's why I was saying don't worry about starting later, because I think that's a good thing.
Because
I started, I was the youngest of my, like, peer group doing comedy, and it's like really weird to be like 22 when people are like not even that much older than me, like 27.
Right.
But it's like it is a gap. And you're like, oh yeah, the stupid shit you believe when you're 22. And like the thing that I always get aggravated with is I used to be so much more opinionated back then. And like I'm not anymore, which is good for, like, real life, because I'm a much calmer, nicer person.
Right.
But I'm like, oh, I used to have, like, hard opinions on stuff.
Do you think that affects your comedy? Do you think it's harder
to
write?
I think what it makes me is more, like, able to look at it from different angles now.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I think is, you know, it's hindsight and, like, perspective changes. Because I like to look at a joke from, like, all angles.
Sure.
And be like, okay, what's the best way I can tackle this and word it correctly enough? Because that's all it is just finding, like, I'm very, I guess, self-conscious that I'm not, like, a smart writer. Like, I love all these great writers and smart comedians that do wordplay and everything. I love that.
Yeah.
But my stuff is, the comic told me, like, this is the perfect way to put it, is, like, playfully blue. So, my stuff, I always try and make sure that it's as good as it is, with as low-brow as it is.
Yeah.
Because it is very low-brow. And that's, like, the stuff with my mom. Like, she's a great audience member. My parents were always great because, like, with comedy, like, they were good about stuff that we watched. They, like, let us watch stuff comedy-wise. Yeah. So, like, she doesn't get offended by stuff. But she doesn't really, you know, dig a whole lot of stuff that I do. She always likes the, like, the deeper stuff that I do. When I talk about...
Your mom doesn't like your nuts material.
Right, exactly. It's like, that's not going to work. But, like, she likes when I talk about, like, more stuff like that, like my, like, social awkwardness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, stuff that's deeper. And that makes sense. And it's like, if I can find that, like, that balance of what I can do. Because that's the hardest thing is, like, it's always so funny when people, like, ask, oh, can you do things clean? Like, clean comedy.
Right.
I don't look at comedy in that way.
Yeah.
I don't look at it from a perspective of clean and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite comedians is Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah.
And I hate when people call him a clean comic because he's not. He's pretty blue. The thing that he does is he just tricks people. He's like, okay, I'm going to get you in here with your whole family. And I'll do, like, a clean set for, like, 15 minutes. And then when it's at the 30-minute mark or the 40-minute mark, I'm going to say a joke. It'll either go over your kid's head or you will have to explain it to them. And that'll be your fault.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he does trick people. And I think it's just, like, the pitch of his voice. I think the higher pitched it is,
yeah,
the friendlier he sounds, right?
Right. It's like, he just has always had stuff. And it's just like, it's crazy. Like, just, I never look at comedy in that, like, way of like, oh, this is clean, this is dirty.
Yeah.
So, to me, like, it's always so funny when people are like, oh, can you do clean? It's like, I don't curse in my act really at all. Like, I don't drop F-bombs, I don't say anything. But right. I say words that are, you know, like, 14 and up will laugh at.
Yeah.
Like,
I was asked to do a show over the summer. Do you know Natty Bumper Car?
Yeah.
I love Natty so much. He asked me to do a show for his summer series, and he was like, it's PG-13. And I was like, what is that? That's like business casual. What does it mean?
Right.
And I asked like four different people. I got four different answers. I was like, you know what? I don't know. I won't talk about poop in this one.
Right. Exactly. It's like, okay, what am I going to do? And to me, it's also the funny thing with like comedy and podcasts and like comedians talking about comedy is it's such a mix of both like nuance and, like, simpleness. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I can make, you know, it's kind of a sad thing also with comedy is, like, you can work as hard as you can on something, and then it becomes, like, just something silly people will like that you do. And right. You'll be like, oh, okay, that was not the intention.
Yeah.
And
it's weird.
And that's a funny thing about being, like, having autism is in, like, the tri-state area of, like, New Jersey to Philly area, is you'll get people who laugh at the word autism when that's not part of the punchline. Right. And it's like, you have to accept that. Like, that's actually just a throwy, like, that's just a thing that's going to happen in that type of, you know, demeanor that people have. Very tough, like, you know, kind of demeanor. And it's just, like, is something that I have to sort of, like, keep in check with.
Yeah.
And also, like, not, like, see the humor from all angles.
Yeah. And that's, that kind of thing, kind of sends me into a bit of a spiral sometimes.
Right.
When I don't feel like I've been writing well, or, like, I've been eating shit at Mike's or whatever.
Right.
I'll like, get into this loop of, like, what even is funny? What even is comedy? Like,
right.
Just getting so bogged down.
Just getting so bummed
out. In the philosophy of it.
Right.
And I think it's so frustrating because there is no one answer.
Right.
And I'm the type of person who took algebra in college because I was so tired of, I have an English degree.
Right.
I was so tired of writing papers with no right answer. It's all like interpretation that I was like, just give me math. Cause at least when it's done, it's done. You right. know, when I've solved for X, that there's no solving for X in comedy is the thing. There is a little bit.
Right.
In
terms of looking for the punchline.
Yeah,
like,
my cat is crawling into my mouth right now. Excuse me.
Yeah, like, that's the funny thing about, like, what I talked about earlier, like, learning to do comedy right away is learning the punchline and learning, like, the steps to it.
Yeah.
Like, I always feel like the best jokes that I have a rhythm to them, and I always like that with, like, I was friends with a lot of one-liner comics, and I love how they can just do that Mitch Hedberg-style thing.
Yeah.
Because it's just immediate, and also there's a rhythm to it. Like, each time, there's, like, a pattern. It's like rap music, almost,
mm-hmm.
in the way that they sort of write. And to me, it's always, like, different things. Just, like, different, I guess, altitudes of my voice, and, like, okay. Also, like, adding... The one thing that's tough is also you got to be, like, when can you be your full personality is
yeah.
a big thing, too. Like, it's just when you get more comfortable, that's when it happens.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that you always hear is, like, oh, when you can talk to the audience, like, they're your friends for a million years.
Right.
Like, that's the same thing, like, I've just realized. And it takes that long time. And I'm just like...
It's a whole journey.
It's a whole journey.
Yeah. And I I think, oh, hello, Bean. I have two cats on my lap now. There's about 26 pounds of cat here. I was a camp counselor for a lot of years. So being up in front of sometimes over 100 people
right. is
relatively commonplace in that in that profession. So like being up in front of people in public speaking and whatever was still anxiety inducing.
Right.
It wasn't something that I had never done before.
Right.
And then of course performing music and whatever, like you gather tool in any right. sort of performance art, you gather tools to like help yourself get up on stage. And,
right.
And this is something I talked about a little bit in, with my friend Julie, who's, I shouldn't mention someone else's podcast right. on your podcast.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
Julie's got a podcast called Curing My Stage Fright. And mm-hmm. she's very interested in like, what does it take for each individual performer to overcome the initial like, ooh, this
oh,
is
yeah.
so much and terrifying. But still getting to the point of like feeling natural on stage and being able to talk to the audience. Like I'm still on that
right.
fucking
like
Stairmaster yeah. myself. Yeah, no, it's rough and it's a whole, and no one set of tools is going to work for every person.
Yeah.
Either.
And I have a terrible, like, this is another terrible, like, person. I don't know if it's a personality thing or just like with me, I kind of get like, I don't have a whole lot of patience for people that have stage fright because I don't remember having stage fright, even though I used to have it. It's like, I'm kind of like, oh, I'm over that now. So I expect everyone else to be over it.
Right.
And it's just, that's not how it works. Like you, I started in music with singing, and I was okay, I was decent. I'm terrible now, like, my voice just hasn't been, like, properly trained. But it was just, like, learning to be on stage with that, and just, like, failing in different, it was like failing in three different art forms. It's like, okay, I failed in, I didn't do well in singing that well enough to be, like, anything special, and I didn't really want to be. You know, it's funny with, like, the Me Too movement and everything in, like, Hollywood. Back when I was, like, 14...
Where are you going with this?
No, this is funny. This okay. is actually... I don't know if this is funny. This is just, like, I didn't want to join the music industry because I thought it was full of that.
Okay.
And yeah, then yeah. I was, like, I went into entertainment anyway, and I was, like, oh, this is everywhere.
It is everywhere.
But that was one of, like, the things of, like, that I was hesitant to. I was, like, I don't want to be in an industry like that. People just use people. And I was just, like, learning to be on stage. Now I'm kind of like, with how comfortable I am on stage, like I just said, I'm not as empathetic as I should be to people who have really bad stage fright.
Yeah.
Because I always look at it this way. I'm like, no one can really judge you. Like, we're all just human. You know?
Right. But like, you can intellectualize that all you want.
Right.
And, like, it's only going to help so much with some, but I understand what you mean. Like, it's hard to hand someone a solution.
Right. And just be like, oh, this is it. And also I'm like, it all varies person to person because yeah. everyone has that experience of the first time they ever spoke in public.
Mm-hmm.
Of the first time like they were able to, you know, kind of do that.
Yeah.
And you're like, and it changes every so often. Like if I have like a gig that's like important, like there's actually a show and I'm actually like getting paid a little bit, it's like, that's when I get nervous. Every other mic that I go to now, it's like, I don't get nervous. The only thing that I hate with mics is performing in front of other comics. Because when that happened during COVID, what was interesting about that, the way that I sort of tricked myself into it working, was I said, okay, I'm going to try and make the comedians that I'm friends with or the people that I look up to
yeah.
laugh.
Yeah.
So, like, if I can make someone who I'm not very close with, but I really love their jokes, is, like, this is the barrier of someone who I think is the funniest person here.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I can make them laugh, that'll be, like, how I make it work. But the weird thing with stand-up is, if you are performing in front of people you know, it becomes much more conversational
mm-hmm.
in a way that doesn't work.
Yeah. Because
it takes away the tricks of, like, oh, you're sort of presenting yourself when you're in front of strangers. You're like, this right. is a presentation. And then it feels like a conversation when you're at a place where you just know everyone.
Yeah, and there's only so much that like, adds to the practice.
Right.
Of perfecting your material and like editing your writing and stuff. Like, I think I'm still early enough along that any amount of stage time is still helping me figure out like what my voice is and how I actually want to structure the jokes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a point where that kind of evens out, where that plateaus.
Right.
And like, well, what do you do? Okay, well, you need to do shows. And
right.
If you can't get booked on shows, you got to start a show. And you just right. gotta like get up and
yeah.
people.
That's the toughest thing, is getting booked on shows, because I know people ask, and that's usually how it like happens. I don't ask. I should. And it's like, I think now I'm kind of coming around to it, that I am going to ask someone soon.
Yeah.
Because I know someone. I've been going to their show a whole lot. Someone I started with. And it's just as like, I think I have a better thing with it now that I have something to offer.
Because
mm-hmm. I'll be like, oh no, I'm not going up there to bullshit. I'm working on this album that I want to do, this special that I want to do. It's like, if I let them know, like, I have, like, stuff. And also, I think my stuff will actually work with their, like, show. Because they do, like, a lot of, like, just sexual, like, names with their, like, shows and stuff.
Okay.
And it's just like, okay, my, like, ball jokes would work here totally. Sure. It's like, this would work well. But also, I just know, like, they probably get, like, hundreds of people that are like, oh, can I do this show? And, you know,
yeah.
it's like,
yeah, I know
you never want to be that burden. Yeah. And then, like, you know, it's such a hard thing. And to me, I have such a mix of, like, I guess imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. too, where that really holds me back, too. Because I'm like, oh, there's so many people that I hold in such high regard. It was very funny to Tiz. When, like, I was talking to him, he's like, oh, you hold me in very high regard. He's like, I'm just a person. I'm just like, well, I started with you, and I think, like, you're one of the best. And it's just like...
He's so great. It's so funny. I want to see... I've only been to his mics. I haven't seen him
yeah.
on a show. I would love to see him on a
no,
show.
No, he's just... He's just so cool. Like. He was just, you know, he was... And he was immediately so nice to me.
Yeah.
When I saw him. Because I saw him at the Stress Factory on, like, the show. And I went up, and it was a big deal to me to, like, go up afterwards. All the comics were talking with each other in, like, the space. And I was like, well, I've been doing comedy for, like, I don't know, like, a year. And I was like, I should go over and talk to them, not feel, like, isolated.
Right.
That I'm not one of them. And he just told me about his mic. And back then, it was a lot more, like, I always joke, we kind of gentrified it. It used to be way more like...
The George Street Co-op?
You know, yeah. Because it used to just be like more black comics, more minorities.
Okay, yeah.
And that was really cool. Like, that was cool to just be in that, like, mindset. You just learn about different people's lives. And that was cool with my mom to, like, kind of expose her to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that she really likes that happened. Because it's all about, like, with comedy, I always think... The one thing that I sort of would only say to people, like, advice-wise, is comedy's, like a combination of everyone. So mm-hmm. you're going to have to, like, get used... You can't be closed-minded.
No.
That's, like, the toughest thing. Yeah. Like, I see that with some people. I'm like, this is not going to work well for you if you don't like gay people. If you don't like trans people, this is not going to work for you.
Yeah,
you're totally. In the entertainment, like... You're in the entertainment business, man. It's like...
Yeah, basically, anyone who's got a different perspective...
Yeah, you're going to meet...
Is in here, yeah.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, I'm also going to meet people who I don't always agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And the flip side of that is just to realize intention. Because a lot of people don't have bad intention. They have the same intention as us, just to make people laugh.
Yeah.
They just have a different perspective in life through it.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing, too, is like... Having, because we take comedy so seriously that we kind of, I think this way, that I kind of ruin it, you know. And it's okay to ruin it for yourself, but you don't want to ruin it for other people.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not.
Do you mean ruin it, like, because you're so intimate with, like, right.
like
structure that, like, just not everything
yeah.
works for you?
Or get, like, or be, like, stringent on how comedy is.
Sure.
Or what you believe comedy is. Like, you know, I like alt comedy. I love it. But also, there is a lot of it that goes into more performance art than I would like, or more different than I would hold to the standard of what I like.
Yeah.
And it's like that I've had to deal with a lot of, like, there's always periods where I'm just like, and this is, I think it goes in any horror film that you're in, where you're just like, oh, maybe I'm just, this isn't just for me. This isn't.
Right, it doesn't mean that it's bad.
It's just not for me.
I've been trying to get more objective about that too.
And it's tough because when you go to open mics, you also want everyone, this is the one thing I was guilty of too a lot early on that I had to change, was you think everyone has the same goal or dreams as you.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Right.
There are people, like, the one thing that I had to get used to was people who just do it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's such a different way. And, like, I don't play sports, but the way that the analogy that I make is, like, if you're going to go on a basketball court, you have to at least try and make it in the basket.
Right.
Because the other players are just going to resent you.
Yeah.
It's like,
you can't just chuck the ball.
You just chuck the ball and be like, no. It's like, we're going to get mad. We're going to be like, well, he didn't do the thing.
I mean, what are your goals? Do you want to be on TV?
I've had so many different ones. To me, my main thing is I just want to be able to do comedy, like, as much as possible. That's always been the deal for me, is like, I don't care about fame or anything like that, but like the level that I would love to be at is like a level that like Mark Norman is at.
Mm-hmm.
Like that level. And then like dream scenario is like be like a Kyle Kinane or Gary Goldman, where they might not be like mainstream famous,
yeah,
but comedians know who they are, comedy nerds.
Yeah, I will.
That's like the barrier for me of like what I want to get to.
Yeah.
And the thing that's with me is, especially in New Jersey and everything, like, I would love to perform like in a different state almost, because I don't really like performing in New Jersey, and the comedy clubs, it's no secret, the comedy clubs here are not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a barrier of like what they like. Like, we have this huge open mic scene.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's so many different places we can sort of make our own way.
Yeah.
But there is still an industry attached with the comedy clubs. And it's always so funny. I have these problems with how comedy clubs are run. But I'm always a hypocrite. I'm like, well, if they offered me a spot, like, I would totally.
Well, because it comes
no matter how much I hate the whole, like, oh, they treat it more like, oh, just a place to sell alcohol. And then it's like, you know, especially near me, the comedy club near me that a lot of my friends work at, is they sort of like comedy in the way that I mentioned, where it's like that tri-state, like, type of mentality.
Yeah.
Where people sort of, like, it's the boomers that like insult comedy.
Right.
They want you to come up and, like, insult the audience and stuff like that. And, like, they're much more brutal. And to me, I'm just like, I make fun of myself. I don't point at other people and make fun of different groups and different things. I'm just like, I always look at myself. And I always feel like that gives you, once you do that, once you make fun of yourself also, that opens the audience up to liking when you take a shot at other people.
Right.
Like, I used to have, I don't do him anymore because it's too crazy with what he's done. But, like, I used to have these jokes about Kanye. And they would always work, because for, like, the first 5 minutes of my act, I'd make fun of myself.
Sure.
So it's like, you kind of point at the elephant in the room, and it's like, okay, now I can look at that person
Yeah, if you show people that you don't hold yourself on an elevated platform,
yeah,
then it's a lot easier to get them on your side when you're like, look at that thing that's silly.
Right.
I don't want to be, like, I'll roast my friends.
Right, roast jokes are...
Yeah.
So hard.
My friends know what my intention is.
Right.
And, like, if I feel like I've overstepped a line, I can go up to them and be like, hey, buddy, I'm sorry that, like, went a little bit further than necessary.
Yeah. Have you done any roast battle stuff?
No.
I've done some.
Not brave enough yet.
My friend has, he does this comedy fight club thing, which is great. They have their own show in, like, Jersey City, and it's great. I have, like, they make it much more, like, he's a wrestling fan like me, so they make it much more, like, scripted in a way, and much more, like, They just make it fun. Like, I have an undefeated streak there. I've won, like, four times. Nice. And it's not out of any, like, skill or anything. It's just they made it that way.
Yeah.
Just because it's funny. And, like, it works. Cool. Okay. It's like, they'll be like, someone will be better than me. And they'll be like, no, you won. And it's like 4-0. It's like, oh, crazy. And then it's like, to me, the hardest thing was, like, roasting people, you know, that I just didn't know.
Yeah.
And just being like, okay. Because there's no, like, animosity afterwards. It's just an interesting way of, like, the first time I met that person, we spent our first time meeting each other insulting each other. It's like, how do you move on from there?
Right.
Oh, like, face insulting someone for the first meeting that you meet them.
Did you see that Dina Hashem clip that went viral years ago? Her roast battle that, like, kind of propelled her into the public view. That one was really funny to me because the guy that she was up against, she's this, like, teeny tiny Middle Eastern chick.
Right.
And this was, like, this massive white dude, and he's like, I'm a dude, and I'm gonna say dude things, and, like, made fun of her looks or whatever.
Right.
And she, the roast that she had for him, she was like, I found online that your mom died, you know, I'm so sorry that you got disfigured in the same car crash or something. Oh. It was brutal.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, I don't like relish being mean to people, but in a situation where someone deserves it,
right,
it's kind of fun.
I think that's how comedy started for me. Mm-hmm. Was I used to, you know, this is the story that I always tell on the podcast, is I used to be, you know, people are always surprised at how, like, I like being roasted by other comedians, and I'm like, well, people actually are funny,
and it's kind
I spent my whole entire life and childhood and, like, high school, like, being made fun of by people who are not funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Once you're made fun of by people who actually have the skill to be funny, you're like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
That's good.
There's a certain amount of, like, expression of love.
Right.
That shows you. Like, if you're in a room of, like, extremely funny people who are picking on each other all the time.
Right.
And they're just nice to you.
Yeah.
Then it's like, oh, well, you don't accept me.
And there's no, like, also, when they make fun of you, that's how you know you're, like, in. You're like, okay, this is it.
Absolutely.
This is what I am. And also, the other thing that I dealt with a lot that just is, like, a hang-up that I have from when I was in high school and stuff is sort of being, like, a cult of personality where people sort of like you and they sort of cartoon you in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of became, like, this meme. And that had a lot of effects on me where it wasn't coming from a negative place. But I couldn't take it seriously.
Sure.
Or, like, the way that it was intended. And that was a big struggle for me. Sure. It's like, if you become sort of this meme figure, I'm like, okay, am I the town idiot that everyone laughs at?
Right.
Or am I this person that is just lovable that everyone loves? And
it's a little dehumanizing, too.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just a meme and not their friend.
And then the thing that happened with that is I tried to make my gimmick or whatever, like, more step into that. And whenever I tried to do that, that shit didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, whenever I tried to make it more of a gimmick, try to make more of what I did on stage, sort of match the gimmick that people thought that I had, it didn't work. But whenever it sounds corny, but whenever I'm truly myself, like, truly my personality, just naturally not thinking about it, that's when it works.
Yeah.
But it's hard to be that guy where, like, I show up, and I just have these quirks that I've had. And on top of the autism, it's like, I've tried to change this about myself since I was, like, 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not changing that part of me. And it's not out of any, like, mean way or, like, defiant way. Like, oh, I'm not changing, like, that way or growing up. It's like, no. This is something that I've been, like, my mom says this, I've been the way since I was 5 years old.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's that sort of thing. So the thing that I always had a problem with was just, like, the amount of people that would just sort of, also, it was a lot of people trying to fit in too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did this roast of myself at this bar that we used to do our mics at, which was, like, Brighton Bar in Long Branch, super huge, like, rock club, like, very popular. And we became, like, we just had our shows there and it was great. But there was this, when I would leave, I would do the open mic when we first started doing it there. And I would, like, leave early. Like, I would go home, watch TV. I would watch my friends perform, go. And I found out from the bartender, he was getting annoyed, that people were doing jokes about me on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't there. You know, because they saw my friends on stage make fun of me.
Yeah.
And
then they just wanted
to be a part of it. And that was where I became sort of the mean thing. And I was just like, oh, yeah, it's hard because I know they're just trying to ingratiate themselves into the group now. But back right. then it was like, oh, no, that's only for specific people to do. It's like, I'm not going to like that. Like, I can take a joke to an extent.
Yeah, totally.
It's sort of like the who you can point and laugh at when they're your friend and when they're not your friend. So that was a thing I had to deal with for a long time.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, I'm always self-conscious now. I always talk not a whole lot on the podcast anymore with people. I always try and be self-conscious of that, of, like, if people have felt that way, too.
Mm.
If people felt like, oh, I'm not getting my image across correctly that I want to be seen.
Right.
I know you're kind of early into it. Do you feel like people have sort of grasped who you are? Like,
I mean, I don't know if I've even grasped who right. I am, honestly. You know, growing up, you're always, you know, trying to be accepted by whoever you think is cool.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're me and, basically every single one of my friends, what you start to do is mirror.
Right. The person exactly.
that you think is cool. And I'm trying to be so much more cognizant of that.
Right.
Especially in comedy, because people can smell.
When oh you're, yeah.
Like, stealing other people's this phrasing.
When you're stealing people's phrasing. And also, but also you, the one cool thing in comedy is, it's always the people you hang around with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's changed so much for me that that's one of the reasons of, like, oh, if I stayed friends with these people, I'd be more, like, successful maybe. But also, I found more people that are sort of make me comfortable to be around.
Yeah.
It's like, that's sort of the, that's another thing that's tough with it, is you want to be in a place where you're safe.
Yes.
All the time and be like, okay, I'm with these people that I like. And it might not make me the most successful, but it's going to make me better as a comedian because I'm going to have people that actually care about me around me.
Right, yeah. And that you can actually have these conversations about, like, what does comedy mean? And, like,
right.
what about my set worked and what about your set worked and
right.
et cetera. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If I have an image that I'm even trying to push onto people
mm-hmm.
or, like, express or whatever, I just want to hang out.
I feel like whenever you go on stage, you have fun, which is something that I am because I'm always like, I want to have fun all the time, not be in my head.
Right.
I feel like you kind of take that step to be like, oh, I'm going to make this fun.
Oh, fantastic. Just convince people that you know what you're doing and then they believe it. And
right.
And they ask you to do stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just been, you know, it's been cool to see that. I'll look at the questions that I had, the other stuff. What has your family and, like, friend experience been with you doing stand-up? Were they surprised? Were they like, oh, yeah, this makes sense? Or
yeah, most people weren't surprised. They were excited. A lot of people were, like, really excited for me, which was really cool.
Right.
My mom is not.
Mm.
And I think she's worried that I'm going to, like, talk about her on stage
right,
or, like,
yeah.
be mean or whatever. And that's just not...
That's not what you do.
No, I'm not interested in doing that. I just want to be a silly little goose.
I think that's funny what people... That's what everyone does, though. They, like, everyone in their family or friends, they think that we're going to talk about them in some way.
Yeah.
And it's like, I always say to my mom, it's like, it's not my story to tell with other people.
Sure.
So, like, I can only talk about me. And... It's a huge part of just figuring out what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. God, what was I going to say? I watched most of Mike Birbiglia's new special.
Oh, yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
So good.
It's so good.
He's so funny. And I think what really struck me about it was the fact that... So we're talking about, oh, well, I'm not just going to talk about my parents on stage... In my mind, because it's not necessarily relatable to
right.
everyone. So, like, what is... Not what's the point, but,
right.
like, you know what I mean? I want it to be our experience and
right.
not just my experience.
Exactly, yeah.
Mike Birbiglia kind of doesn't I'm not going to say he doesn't care. I don't know the guy. But he talks about experiences that are so specific to him.
Right.
His health issues and, like, his experiences with doctors, whatever. But somehow, he makes it so relatable and so funny. I have nothing in common with that man. I'm a 30-something queer woman living in New Jersey. He's a 40 or 50-something straight man living in L.A. Like, there's nothing better, little better experiences that overlap. But somehow I was howling watching the special.
It's so... You talk about a guy, like, the thing that's interesting to me is how much he evolved, too, because his younger stuff, he was always trying to be like Dimitri Martin, like, kind of stuff, like, very short one-liner type stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of. And he sort of sprinkled in the stories. He had, like, My Secret Public Journal and stuff like that that he did online in Bronx Stage. And I always related to him as, like, maybe not per se, like, jokes or, like, but I always related to him as a person. Mm-hmm. I always felt like we had a very similar personality. I always feel like if I had to, like, name, like, comedians that I'm sort of similar to in personality, it would probably be him, Joe List, and, like, Gary Goldman. Like, just personality-wise.
Yeah.
Of just, like, kind of, you know, it's kind of like, what's the word? Like a lovable loser type of thing.
Right.
Of, like, so with him, I've always loved his stuff. And the thing with him that I loved when I got into being a huge comedy nerd was with him and Pete Holmes, like, they were friends with everybody.
Yeah.
That was so cool to me. Like, Pete Holmes started doing stand-up in 2000, met everyone who does comedy.
I love
and is, like, friends with everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's, like, one of my big influences, too, of just loving comedy and loving it in an earnest way of not being, like, too nerdy about it.
Yeah.
Of just being like, oh, he can geek out about this in a good way.
Right.
That is healthy.
Yeah. Like, I saw a clip of an interview with Pete Holmes just, like, on like a meet and greet event somewhere, and they asked him, like, how do you prepare to be on stage? Do you write out a script or do you do bullet points or whatever? And I was so excited because I'd never seen a big comedian answer a question like this before.
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, well, I used to write myself, like, a whole script and, like, do it beat by beat, but now it's really just bullet points because I want to leave myself room to improvise. But then he said, when I was younger and I was, like, I hadn't even started yet, I was just so obsessed with comedy specials, and I would write down, like, a transcript of the special and then, like, make a note of when the laughs happened and, like, analyze how the laughs happened. And I love that type.
That's so cool.
That's so nerdy.
Nerdy.
Much.
Yeah, I like that. Like, I have this on Spotify. I have this album, like, this thing that this playlist of, like, all the jokes that, like, make me laugh, like, super hard.
Mm-hmm.
That just made me... I call it cry laughing, because it's just, like, everything that made me, like, so hilarious that made me, like, cry laughing.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's funny how all these bits, like, sort of change from, like, this is really irreverent. Like, all this stuff that I liked when I was, like, 14 is, like, really irreverent. And then, like, oh, these are, like, deeper or darker jokes. And it's just, like, finding what you like is so interesting.
Yeah.
And also, like, just seeing people, like, the thing that's kind of interesting with comedy is we always like to think, especially with early specials, like, the thing that's so different now is everyone is so accessible now through social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when people started doing stand-up, like, their first special, when people used to see it, like, now it's an advertisement. Now it's sort of like, oh, you get to see what this person is doing.
Yeah.
When they first came out, like, with doing specials, it was, like, something this totally unknown person just worked on in the dark for so long.
Right.
And it's, like, it's an interesting thing to look at. And I look at everything now of, like, what opportunities people get, and I'm just, like, that, especially when it comes to what I want to do, it's, like, how do you show... It's also, like, how do you show that you're good at something?
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, if you've been doing something for so long, you don't want it to go to, like, be, like, a waste.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, maybe I did this thing my whole entire, like, 14 years and it was not worth it.
Right, yeah.
And it's, like, stressful. It's, like, oh, so that's, like, a part of it. And just, like, being, I think the one thing that's kind of you know, also a funny thing with the level that you're at, you always have to remember that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing to realize what level you are at.
Sure.
And I think that's actually a healthy thing.
Yeah, be objective.
Because you're just like, okay, so, you know, this is where I am. Like, whenever I get upset about, oh, I hate being in New Jersey, I hate being stuck here, I want to perform in different places, I'm like, well, maybe if I went, maybe I moved to Texas and did comedy there, I'd be fucking terrible. They'd hate me.
Yeah, I think about the Chicago scene a lot, and how the Chicago scene is said to be, like,
yeah, it's said to be, like, amazing.
Competitive, and everyone's yeah. good, and whatever. Yeah. And it's true, like, every Chicago-based comedian that I've seen material from is very good.
Is very good.
But also, I curate my fucking TikTok timeline to see comedians that I like.
Right, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, like, I also felt that way about Brooklyn before I ever went to a mic in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I went to a mic in Brooklyn, and it's just regular.
It's just regular.
It's just regular times with regular guys.
That's one of the funniest things, too. When I went to Texas, 2 years ago, just come for, like, 3 days. He invited me, and it was crazy. Like, I was like, oh, Seattle is the same everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the same genre everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the same setup. Everyone does the same stuff.
It's all very similar type of people.
Well, yeah. It's all like, okay.
For affirmation.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm pretty. It was voice.
With my voice. And it was just, it was such a weird time period that I went there, too. Because it was like Joe Rogan was rumored to, like, he was supposed to open the club there, at the club that I performed at, like, once. And he ended up not moving there, but a lot of people heard that he was going to do that, so there was, like, people like me who just came from all over.
And
just a pilgrimage of people.
So, with daddy issues.
Yeah, so we were just like, so it was really cool the last day I was there, because I did, like, just mics all around, like, the town. From, like, 3:30 to, like, 10 at night.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. It was, like, we did, like, 4 mics, but it was, like, just around the periods of time. I was, like, oh, wow. And it was so cool to do that.
That sounds really cool.
And, like, I have friends that have done, like, whenever my friends talk about doing, like, stuff in New York, I'm always so envious. I want to do that so bad. Of, like, going to different mics and, like, sort of going around. But also, I know that would be hard for me because of, like, A, walking and I'm so lazy. And B, like, being able to move in that operation and be like, oh, do a 2 minute set here, do 2 minutes set there.
Right.
It's like, if I do 2 minutes, I'm either going to be, like, anytime I get off stage, I'll be super hyper but not want to do anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I need to sit down.
Yeah.
It's like, I need to, like, relax here. It's
yeah, like, and one of the things I like best about the open mic is the hang afterwards.
Right, yeah. So the, like, hang before and afterwards. I always feel like that I wish was, you know, it's such a hard thing to do, but that's the one thing that I wish would happen is, like, you know, people always want to, like, sort of record mics and, like, sort of, they wish that we could, like, sort of look at it that way. I'm like, it's more fun to, like, record us just bullshitting with each other.
Honestly, that's where the funniest stuff happened. I went to a mic, I don't know, some time ago, and there were way more comics there than I'd ever seen in my life. Like, this particular mic doesn't really have that big of a turnout every week.
Right.
Which is fine. You know, it's whatever. We're all scattered all over the place. We're all doing whatever. But for some reason, this night, it was super hot, and everyone was there. No one laughed.
Oh.
Everyone bombed. And I think, and this is the only time I'm ever going to even kind of implicate the audience.
Right.
Is we're all comics. We didn't show up for each other.
Right.
No one laughed because no one was paying attention.
Right.
You know?
That's the hardest thing with comedy is the live comedy is the apathy of the audience of, like, oh, they're not mad at you. They're not, you know, not buying your drinks. They're not, like, you know, mad or anything or not in the mood. They just don't care about you. And
yeah, and that's, you kind of have to lead them into it.
Yeah, they have to, like, also, I think the tough thing is you're sort of, when you're at an open mic, you're in that different mindset of, like, oh, I want to work on stuff. And once there's an audience there at any type of place, you're like, oh, now the performance is on.
Right.
And it's like, okay, now I have to do this. And it's like, you know, I always go through that of like, oh, I want to work on these jokes. I need to work on these jokes that don't work and make them work and like put myself through that. But then there'll be an audience, like especially at like the George Street Co-op, I'll go there and I'll be like, whenever I want to work on stuff, I'll be like, that's fine. Like, no one's there and it's just us. Like, there's a small group of us.
Right.
It's like, okay, that's good. I can work on my stuff. And then the only problem I have with that is it being too conversational.
Right.
And then the other thing is, like, when there is just, like, even if there's just two new people, I'm like, oh, they haven't heard my jokes. I need to tell them. Yeah. And everyone else hates the set. Yeah. But.
My buddy Steve Wrigley, a New Zealand comic, he's been doing it for like 20 years,
right.
Like 25 years. He'll give me these like wonderful little nuggets of advice.
Right.
And one of his main things is, if you go up on stage with the mentality, this could bomb, but we're all going to have the best time with it.
Right.
This could bomb, but we're all in it together.
That's why I always have to, I try and get myself in that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But also I don't have like a leader, because I've never been one who likes to open shows and go first and anything. Like, I've been trying to do that with myself, make myself, you know, go earlier on stage and perform. But to me, I'm just like, I like it when the table is set. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I like when the temperature of the room is fine, and it's like I can figure out what I can talk about.
I like the cushy comfiness of an already warmed up
crowd.
That's a good point, though. I should start signing up first.
And then, to me, it was like, when I started out, I was also following people that were so good. So it was like, I just remember when I would follow Tim Lowe and just be like, okay, this is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Or another person that was really hard to follow and still is. Is Dan Farley.
Yeah.
He's just too hard to follow.
I love him. He's
so great.
He's got a lot of sharp edges, but he's a big, mushy center.
No, he's someone who just, he's like, you know, it's so, like, he'll be honest about it. Like, the reason kind of he isn't more known is because of all of his problems with alcohol and stuff.
Sure.
But, like, he has good reputation. Like, Jessica Kirsten and all these people that, like, go to the Stress Factory. Like, they love him. Like, all the established, like, famous comics. Like, they like him. They're like, they view him as, like, someone who could be, like, on TV and famous.
Yeah.
But he just, you know, he just never got to that point. And he's just so good. He's so much, like, leagues ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
It's so fun to watch. It's like, that's where I feel like, you kind of feel like the B team. You're like, oh, yeah, this is, like, so other level.
Right.
And he's such a nice guy, too. Like, he doesn't seem that way. He's just so funny.
Yeah. He had a mic for a little bit in New Brunswick at the basement of a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, literally my fifth open mic.
Oh.
And I went down there, and he was very nice. He was very welcoming. I had met him once before.
Mm-hmm.
But that night, there was a very drunk birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
Down there, and they were heckling the shit out of every comic.
Out of every comic.
And, like, VJ was, like, doing his best to keep the shit together.
Oh, VJ is awesome at that. He is so good at, you know, talk about a person that, like, how it helps about being in different, you know, friend groups with, living with him for 2 years and just hanging out with him was so fun.
Yeah.
And so cool just to watch his mind. Because he is someone who he likes dark humor.
Yeah.
But, like, smart dark humor. So his stuff is so, like, razor sharp.
Yeah, no, he's great.
And I just remember, like, being so proud of myself. We were, we're in the car, like, together, was riding back from this mic, and, you know, he's just doing his, you know, irreverent stuff that we're talking about, and I'm just like, this is like Comedians in Cars being canceled.
And they made it Cars being canceled. That's funny.
Yeah, like, they laughed so hard, and I was like, that gave me such an ego boost.
Yeah,
to be like, I made him laugh.
Yes, really hard. I love that moment. Oh my god. Yeah, when you crack someone up that you really respect.
Yeah, and that's where, like, in the past year, like, the past year I've gotten more confident, mm-hmm. which is such a weird thing feeling for me, because I've always mentioned, like, you know, having that, like, crisis of, like, having that, the, like, what's it called that I called it? Of, just having that, like, thing of, like, oh, I'm not as good as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I'm good. Like, that's the thing that I can at least say, is, like, I can say that I'm good.
Yeah.
And I can say that I know what I'm doing. And that gives a lot more, like, I think you'll get there, too, where you feel like, okay, I can do this. Like, this is something I can do. And I think that just happens with anybody when they do something for a long time. Sure. There's like, oh, I can do this adequately. It's like, I don't know how good I am at it, but I know that there's some level that I am good at it.
Yeah. That's Maria Bamford said something to that effect.
I love her so much.
Where she was like, yeah, I mean, you just do it for a while, and then suddenly it's something that you do now.
Right. Right.
Yeah, her very, like, matter-of-fact way of phrasing things is really endearing, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And all the different fucking voices that she does.
Oh, yeah. I have a funny story about her, kind of, is when I started watching stand-up intensely, like, became a huge fan of it, I saw her, and that was the point of, like, I don't get it. I did not like her stuff. Mm-hmm. I did not get it. And then I remember the first time I ever did stand-up, her name came back to me.
Yeah.
And I went, the moment I got off stage and bombed, the first time I ever did stand-up, I thought of her and I went, she's a fucking genius.
She is a fucking genius.
And I think, it's just that humility of, like,
yeah,
I thought she was terrible. I didn't like her stuff at all. And then she was like, and then it was like, oh, she's working on a whole other level.
Yeah.
And this was, like, not even, like, where she is now. It was, like, 2010 or whatever. Just mm-hmm. being, like, no, maybe it was 2015. So I was just, like, this is crazy. Just being, like, oh, yeah, this is something I totally did not get until I did it myself.
And she just, she kind of, like, she doesn't lead people into her jokes. Which, I don't know, I guess, could be alienating to some people, but I think that that's part of her brilliance, is that she just lays out a scenario. She, like, throws an entire book at you.
Yeah,
your head,
she throws an entire thing.
And if you don't, like, look at the book as intensely as she's looking at the book, you're not gonna understand what's going on.
Oh, yeah, for
sure.
And
she'll, like, have a conversation between two different characters, and she'll alter the voices. Yeah, so, like, she makes it clear enough.
She makes it clear enough.
But if you're not, like, on the same wavelength, then it's just gonna be like, what the fuck is happening?
Oh, yeah. And she's so good at just, like, knowing that barrier of, like, when to do stuff.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that, like, I'm getting to now, is when do you turn it on, like, full blast?
Yeah.
And just be yourself. Like, that's the hardest thing for me, is, like, okay, how can I be as comfortable as possible? Like, to me, I always used to have, like, I don't know, I'd be, like, not superstitious, but I'd have, like, little things of, like, you know, it's so funny, when you start out, you're like, maybe I shouldn't eat anything before I go on stage, and that'll change something.
Right.
Like, maybe if I eat, like, the one thing I'll do is, if I have too much coffee, which I usually do before I go on stage sometimes, is it makes me, like, it takes away that anxiety to me of being on stage. But also I need that, because that's part of my, like, who I am a little bit. So it's, like, an interesting thing with that, of, like, the way that I sort of try to explain everything, like, when I get on stage is, you know, with the social awkwardness and all the, like, mental stuff I have, I'm like, you know, it's funny. It's like, I'll say, like, oh, I have to convince these people I'm good in, like, 15 seconds.
Right.
And, like, be like, no, I know I look awkward, but I've been doing this a very, very long time. I'm good at this. And then the thing that I think just, like, is kind of hard with people who've been working on this, like, special that I've been working on, is I work too much on the intro part of it. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have it down. I have, like, the first 10 minutes down, but everyone is sick of hearing it.
Sure.
But it's, like, this set, like, all the comics are going to hate it because they heard everything, But the new people here, or the people that are just here for, like, the first time.
Yeah.
Like, at the Culp, I'm just like, they're going to like this.
Yeah.
They're going to like this. Like, you're going to have to bear with me, because you're going to hear all the stuff that I do. But this first 10-minute chunk that's, like, broken up into, like, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Is, like, going to do it well.
Yeah.
And it's such a hard thing, because it's like, I want to do other stuff, but there's people here.
For sure. Yeah. Do you, how close are you to
I have to do, everything? I have to do 20, I have to write, like, 20 minutes more.
Okay.
And add 20 minutes more to it. I have, like, the first 20 minutes, which is not as far as you think it is. Because you're, like, you want to do, like, 50 minutes, like, close to 50, 60 minutes. It's like, okay, I need to come up with a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I say I have, you know, 20 minutes. It could be 15, just based on the speed.
Right?
Yeah, of that totally. I do it.
Yeah, do you, like, think... Do you think you'll, just, like, what are the logistics of how you're going to record it?
I've been, you went there to the, showroom thing.
I've been there.
You've been there, yes. Yeah. That space, I want to do it there.
Oh, I bet Joe would love that.
He talked about it, I talked about it with them. Like, I don't know if I'd have him totally involved with it, but just, like, I just know that I'm performing there a whole lot, and that's where I want to do it. That's my, like, dream scenario is to do it there. Like, I have to get closer with the people. Like, I think it's cool that I've been going there a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because then the people that work there will know who I am and be, like, ingratiated to me. And also, like, when I go and do that show, like, when I go and do that thing, I don't know the call to show or mic. It's very complicated. But I'm like, I just told them, like, I'm working out my material for that. So you're going to get to see it in, like, two minute increments of, like,
yeah.
what this can eventually be.
I'm glad that it's working as well as it is. Because when Joe first told... I met Joe in Garwood, just randomly.
Yeah.
And when he first told me about it, I was like, 2 minutes is a really
brief No, spot. And it was really... I can be honest about this. Like, he's had to beg me to come back and do it. And it's part of that thing of, like... And that's another thing of doing comedy for so long in one area is you become that, like... You become that cult of personality, that sort of that meme or whatever, and then people expect things of you, and you're like, okay, you don't want to be an asshole and be like, oh, I'm not going to do this. Like, I'm too good for it. And that's the thing that I had to get, like, sort of over myself on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem that I have now there is there's kind of this, I don't want it to happen, but it's happening. There's a lot of people that go there, and they don't really... They're not comics yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough for me to watch.
Sure, yeah.
And to me, I'm like, I'm going... the last time I was there, I was, like, walking out, like, every 5 minutes just from, like, away from it, just back to the main lobby. I said to the guy at the, like, candy counter, I'm like, I'm sorry I keep coming back here. He's like, oh, it's fine. I'm like, I just can't watch people do something that I love, do an art that I love, just so terribly.
It
just, like, painful. Physically hurts me. And yeah. I come off as such a dick to these people. And I'm like, and I see the division already between these, like, newer guys that only come to this thing. They don't go to any of our mic. And the, like, established people, like, that I'm all friends with. And I'm like, I don't want us to be, like, ostracizing them or, like, make this hierarchy at all. But also I have this hierarchy in my mind of, like, I need to see this person do stand-up for 4 years for me to like them.
Oh, I'm honored.
It's like, wow. So when I see someone like you,
yeah.
Who kind of has the, like, this is such a, I probably an elitist thing to say. It's like someone who has the main ingredients.
Mm.
It's like, you are a funny person. Like, that is a good thing.
It's
like,
your best.
Like, you're funny. Like, that's. And I think I'm funny. Like, I know I'm funny. So it's like, you know, and you have to know that. You have to have that.
You do. You have to know how to find the feel for it.
Yeah. So,
and
like,
it's not easy.
To me, it's like when I see people that are not doing well, I just know immediately, like, I also know two things. I know this person might not be good now. And in a year, maybe in 6 months, they'll be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to wait. Like, you know, seeing Kyle... Colorado, so funny when seeing him start out, he was always just like, he always had it, but like the stuff he has now just is fantastic.
Yeah, I love
it. And it's just like, it's funny to go back and think, like, I knew him when he had, you know, he probably has, like, you know, pages and pages of material. I knew him when he had, like, 3 jokes. Yeah. it's, like, crazy to think, like, I knew him back then when he had so little, and now he has, like, so much of a repertoire with what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you guys start together?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, he kind of started, like, in the later period of me. I guess he started in 2015. He started in, like, 2018. Mm-hmm. And, or maybe 2017. And it was just, like, it was cool because he was doing improv, too. And, like, he was in a different improv group than me. But he, because I wasn't doing improv anymore when he was doing it. So he was doing that, and then he had his experiences of doing his like birthday stuff, and also he had just gotten out of, he was just starting to do the balloon stuff like professionally.
Yeah.
Because he had just gotten out of doing all the mascot stuff. So he was like a mascot for like different parties, and for, he worked at Chuck E. Cheese for a long time. Right. So he had jokes about that. And he wasn't really talking a whole lot about that. And it was just like, once he started getting more into it, it was just like, okay, this is more. And he just got more comfortable. It was just what happened.
Yeah.
You know, we just went to, but it was just so cool. Like, to me, that's one thing that I love about stand-up, is it's like a movie almost.
Oh, sure. You get to see all this character progression. 1 minute.
I'm just telling my mom we're almost done.
Yeah, no worries.
So wait, what was I saying? I'm sorry.
The comedy is like, kind of like a movie.
The thing with like that is like you get to see the transformation of everyone.
Yeah.
You get to see everyone grow up. Like, not just as comedians, but as people. Like, I know people who have just, I've known them since they were 27.
Sure.
And now they're like 37. Like, crazy. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like you see them grow up as people and comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just is a wild, wild thing of doing it. It just, it makes it so much more fun to watch. I'm always like, I remember, have you been to, what's it called? They call it the Cock?
Yes.
I've been there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember this, like, third time I went there. There was, like, every comedian that I sort of knew in the past, like, 5 years was there.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is like a season finale. But every right. character is in a different season.
Yeah.
It's like, this is season 6 Josh Tinley. This is season 3, like, whoever. And I'm just like, yeah, it's cool just to see people, how they progressed, and how just we go. And that's the one thing.
Write different ways and, like, figure out different, like, more creative structures and stuff. That is, this is a really fun time.
And I say this a lot on the podcast of, I started the podcast to give more of a voice to people in New Jersey. Because it's such an underrated scene.
Sure, yeah.
Like, everyone knows about New York. Everyone knows about Philly. We have a diverse, like, comedy group.
Yeah.
Like, of people. Like, of course, we have our main guy, who's Chris Gethard, who's awesome.
Yeah.
Such an awesome guy. I know so many people. Nice. I've never met him before, but, like, I know that I know eventually I'm going to meet him someday. I'm going to have enough mutual friends to be like, oh, I know this person.
Yeah. Like,
I'll be like, okay. I'll be like, now I see you. It's like,
I did a show with Chelsea Morosky.
Oh, that's awesome.
They'd worked with Geth on the Public Access show.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And I got to meet him at Silverstream one time when Dave Ross was doing a show called Dave versus Dave.
Yeah.
And had Gethard on. Super nice guy. And that's what I love about comedy is, as far as I've experienced, there, to an extent, it almost doesn't matter, like, where anyone else is at. If you walk up to a comedian and be like, hey, I'm a comic too, like, what do you think about this part of it? What do you think about that part of it? That's already, like, a leveled out playing field of, oh, we can have a conversation.
Oh, for sure.
We do this weird thing.
We do this really weird thing.
That we both get now.
Right. Like, whenever I met, like, certain comedians, I met, I was able to see Michael Ian Black live, and I met him for, like, I don't know, 4 minutes, and he was nice to me, but I was, like, 2 years in, and I told him I was doing stand-up. He was very nice about it, but, then I met Gary Goldman, when I went to see him live when he was doing his last HBO special, mm-hmm. which was, like, growing up in the 70s, and how he was, like, kind of a more gentler soul, and, like, stuff like that. And when I met him during that show, I had such a terrible time because there was just a terrible audience that they weren't heckling, but they were just talking to each other. Like, it's kind of weird how, like, he asked them to leave. He's like, I'll pay for everything. Like, anything that you've eaten, I'll pay for it. Just leave. Because I'm just like, that's the weirdest thing, to, like, go to a thing and not listen to the person. It's like, this isn't TV.
Yeah.
Like, you're not watching TV at home.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, and they were right in the front. So I was, like, angry the whole entire night. But just, like, meeting him afterwards and, like, how nice he was. And then, like, he messaged me. Like, I messaged him on, like, Twitter, and he remembered me. And it was, like, so cool. And it was just, like, the like, meeting of it was, like, okay. That was where I felt, like, even though I'm on, like, a lower level than him, at least just, like, an even...
Yeah.
Like, thing of, like, okay, he knows that I do what he does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I really like it. And the type of community within a comedy circuit is a very unique type of community. Like, within the music community, we're all just fucking simping for each other all the time. Like, oh my God, you're so good at guitar. Oh, your songs are great. And we mean it. It's true. And that's just, it's just not the same within comedy, because we're all, it's not that we're mean to each other, it's not that we're always assholes to each other, but that is kind of like
the comfort zone. The hardest thing with comedy as a group is we're all sort of like, it's like it's kind of like the game, I'm not touching you, I'm not, it's like, I'm not competing with you, I am competing with you at this moment, we're still friends, I am competing with you at this moment.
Who's going to say the funniest thing? Is it going to be me? It better be me.
I'm going to be on this show, I'm going to be on this thing.
I'm going to one-up you,
That's exactly what it's like.
But there is still, like, deep affection
between
comedians, it just presents in a very different way.
And the reason why I think we become so intimate with each other immediately is because we get to see each other fail.
Yeah.
And when you see someone fail, it's like that empathy thing of like, okay, I've been there.
Yeah.
I know what it takes of like what it is.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is like, you'll be like, you can just also, there's a lot of, like, commiserating, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the same thing that I mentioned with, like, the showroom. It's like, I'll tell comics, like, they'll be there the first time. I'll warn them, like, what it's going to be. And then we can just sit back and laugh at all how terrible it gets. And be like, oh, okay, now we get this.
Yeah.
Now we know what this can be. And, you know, I like going there now. And, you know, Joe is so awesome. He's so great to me. And just been so great to me. But it's that period of, like, when you're hanging with comedians, like, just... being able to, that's one of the things like that we're good about, is like commiserating is the funnest, it's one of the funnest things. You think like, you know, and that's the thing with comedy that's tough for me is doing it as long as I've been doing it, is I don't want to become like a know-it-all, come off as a know-it-all, and I don't want to come off as bitter about anything.
Right.
That's the reason why I started doing this podcast, was I wanted to give more of a voice to New Jersey comedy. But also, I wanted to give myself a better attitude and better mindset about it.
Sure.
Instead of being like, oh, I hate being stuck here. I want to perform in different states. I want to go somewhere else to do comedy. And it's like, I do want that. But also, I have to remind myself, what I got here is pretty, like, this is a valuable thing.
Yeah, it's the love the one you're with type of situation.
Yeah. So it's like, it sort of helped my attitude. And then also able to look at it from a different perspective through everyone. Especially people who have been doing it longer than I have, and more established people, and be like, okay, like, because you may think that you've, and you know, I think this is another fun thing with it, is you're always unlocking new things, like unlocking a new piece. You're like, okay, I got to this point. And it's another thing when we talk about like comedy classes, is like, to me, I'm like, I learned how to do everything myself, and I'm very proud of that, because I had no other, like, I wouldn't say, like, Poison, but I had no other, like, person's, like, thing that they pushed onto me. Yeah. To be like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, totally. And, yeah, going back to what you were saying about that earlier with, like, your sense of humor is so personal to you.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want anyone else's, like, specific advice going into my, because I want all the words that I'm gonna say to come out of here,
right?
I don't want people feeding me lines. The occasional tag is
different. Oh yeah,
like we all give of each course. Other tags.
I've, that's I've gotten that before,
but you know, I don't want people feeding me lines. I don't want people telling me how a joke should be structured, because like, what if they're wrong?
Right.
Like, don't give me your comedy rules. I'm gonna make
right. my own. It's like you want to make your own stuff and just be like. Be your own person.
Yeah.
That's, of course, what you want to do. And with comedy, the tough thing is it always change. It's always so weird because just, I think it's the same thing with everything. Just other people ruin it for for everyone else.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've seen myself get to that point where I don't want to be that person. Like, I know we kind of got to finish soon, but I just want to, like, I don't know if you've been paying attention at all to the Matt Rife.
Yes.
Stuff at all.
Yeah.
To me, I spent so much. The thing that's annoying to me is, like, when he first started getting, like, a little bit of heat before his special, because of just how popular he was getting, I would, like, defend him a whole lot, because he started when he was 14, started doing it professionally when he was 15. He was, a lot of people don't know this, he was an opener for Ralphie May for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Ralphie was, like, super good to him. And, like, just to think, like, he got him wallowed in and out in his 20s. And, like, he's been doing it for 14 years, like,
so
12 years.
Not better,
so right? It's like, yeah. And to me, I'm just like, yeah, that's another point that I have, too.
Yeah.
It's like, how is he not better? But also, like, he has a sense of humor that he likes, but he got a totally different audience.
Yeah.
Through TikTok of that. And I understand how debilitating that is.
I get that being frustrating
totally. But also part of me is like, you can't shit on everyone then once you have people at your table.
Yeah,
you might not like these people, you might not think they get your comedy or whatever comedy you like, but you have these people now and you have to adjust what they like about you to that.
if you want the fame then you have to kind of pander a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, it's like, nobody wants, this is the funny thing, like, talking about, like, where I want to be in comedy in the future, it's like, I don't want fame. Like, fame is scary, don't want it, don't, I have the same, like, thing that everyone has.
Yeah.
Like, hesitation sources that everyone has. But I think the one thing that I always wanted is, like, respect, or, like, the respect of your peers.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing that, like, makes me so sad about Matt Rife. Mr. Moore. Sad than angry or anything. It makes me sad because it's one thing when people are, when the general public doesn't like you. When the people in your profession are shitting on you.
Yep.
That is sad. And yeah. That is something that would kill me. That would.
I know.
I would literally, like, that would devastate me.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing that it is for me. Is like, I don't want to be, like, this super famous person, be on movies or anything. I just want to do stand-up and do it for as many people as possible and do it in a way where people say, that is the right way to do it, or that is a way that's valid.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone to do that, to get to that point, no matter how much you do or how much or where you're at, just to be like, the way that I see him on stage and the way that I didn't watch the special, but just like I saw parts of it. And I was just like, to have that chip on your shoulder now,
yeah,
is bad to me. It's like, I can make that if you're like coming up in the industry, I can understand that feeling. But once you've sort of made it like past that point,
yeah,
you're like, you gotta be happy, dude. You gotta be happy. And so, like, many people in my position would be killing to have what you have.
Yeah. And like, okay, say he was going to alienate his female audience anyway because he was like pissed off,
right?
He just thought he,
yeah,
was fine, understandable. all of the jokes that I watched, like half of the special.
Yeah.
All of the jokes that I saw were just lazy.
Yeah, they're just lazy. Just
dumb, lazy jokes. And like, okay, have your sense of humor. Do whatever you gotta do. But get creative, dude.
Right.
Like, do it. And do
I think the thing that's tough with it is he has that thing that made him. That made him, like, his style that he likes.
Yeah.
And the style that he likes is very hard because it's, like, it's almost like opinion comedy, which I hate because I'm always, like, looking for the punchline.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a point. I'm stupid. I'm an idiot. I don't want to watch comedy and think too hard.
Sure.
And I understand there's a flip side to that. Well, why do you like it when it's social justice stuff? it's like okay, that's a fair point.
Confirmation bias is delicious, right? You know, that's fine.
But it's like that way of like, I just want to know where the punchline is. I just want to know that of like, don't have this. Like I think he sort of has this anti, like he has this joke, this great joke, his greatest joke he has. Even though I hate the message behind it, is he has this great one of his, the only best bit that he has, is a debate between it's a fictional debate between a trans person and a person in a wheelchair over who has it harder, mm-hmm. like you know that like game that people play all the time, you know, like yeah. who has it harder? Yeah. It's like that. It's that conversation. Like
suffering Olympics.
And it's like a suffering Olympics type of joke, and it's very well done. And then. He just has this message at the end of it that it's just like, oh, you can't be a victim. It's like, what, dude, you're not a victim. So, like, you don't understand
yeah.
what it's like to be... It's easier on the other side of it.
Yeah, you're literally all of the winning demographics.
Right.
You're a white,
yeah.
presumably straight
yeah.
male.
Yeah.
You had enough money for plastic surgery, obviously. Right.
It's like, you can't just say, like... You can't just say, oh... And he comes at it from, like, a positive standpoint of, like, oh, you can overcome it and whatever... But it's like, no, some people can't. Some people can't overcome shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the point of it. And to me, I'm just like, I like comedy that is... And it can go the other way to me, too. Like, when the whole Hannah Gadsby stuff came out, like, I was a big, like, person that... I hated that I was like everyone else. And I was like, oh, this is not for me or whatever. And I was just like, the one thing that people didn't know is that was, like, her first special in America. But that was, like, her 10th special, like, tour that she ever did.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what she does. And it's, like, it's so different of how comedy is treated in different areas of the world, too. They just have different styles and different things that they do and like.
What was
so
the... Was it called Claudette? What was their first special called? The first Netflix special? I don't remember.
Oh.
Their second one I liked a lot.
That they had a joke about figuring out like that they were autistic.
Yeah.
That I loved so much.
I love the like table of contents section at right. the beginning where they were like, this is how the show's gonna go.
Right,
I'm gonna talk about this, I'm gonna make this joke. It was really good.
And that's the funny thing of like that's another thing too. Like I can finish up on this. That's one of the funniest things about stand up. Is you have to teach. The hard thing is you have to teach the audience how to be an audience sure. at every show.
Yeah.
And that's the toughest thing. You need to have that voice
mm-hmm.
in you that's, okay, this is how the show is going to go.
Yeah.
And the toughest thing is you can't go too far where you're telling people, like, where you're too commanding.
Sure.
But also, because you want everyone to have a good time and have... a fun time.
Right.
But also you don't want to get off the rails. Like,
yeah.
That's the one, like, thing that I can sort of get annoyed with at mics and, like, any mic, really, or any, like, show or anything, is, like, as long as you have a good stage, a microphone, that's it. Like, that's all you need.
Yeah.
And the thing that happens is people get involved and they either want it to be bigger than it is or they don't give a crap at all about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, there needs to be a happy medium.
Sure.
So to me, I get sort of, like, anxious about that. But I just realized, like, you kind of... It's the same thing where, like... I use the metaphor, like, setting the table. Like, when people come in, you know, and they you already know the temperature of the room, you have to set that temperature, like, as a main person doing it.
Yeah.
So I always look at that as, like, it's just such a... But the cool thing is, you can always keep doing it. And I think that's one of the things that's cool about stand-up is, like... also, another thing is, like, no matter what happens, like, you can just keep doing it.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, there's very little of a... There's, like, really only, like, three things you can do that would stop you from doing comedy. It's like...
Number one, get your throat ripped out.
Right.
Can't really
do right. It's well, like that.
Okay, no. Sorry, you can do physical comedy then.
Right.
You can do pratfalls all the time.
But I would just say, like, as long as you don't go to an open mic with a gun or say the word, you'll be fine. You know, it's funny. I used to say to people, I have to fix this phrase now because I used to say to people, oh, stand-up comedy can't hurt you physically. It can only hurt you mentally, emotionally, and financially.
Yeah.
And then people started getting slapped on stage, and I was like, yeah, it can hurt you physically.
Well, I'll keep his wife's name out of your mouth, so. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
This is so fun, yeah.